Welcome to Thrilling Tales of Adventure. I'm Martell, reading Martin Conisbee's Vengeance by Jeffrey Farnall. Chapter 10, How I Came Aboard the Happy Dispatch, and of My Sufferings There. I awoke gasping to the shock of cold water, and was dimly aware of divers people crowding about me. "'Tis a fine, bull-bodied boy, Job, all brawn and beef. Witness your eye, Lord love me!" exclaimed a jovial voice. "Aha, Job, a lusty lad! Heave t'other bucket over him." There came another torrent of water, whereupon I strove to sit up, but finding this vain by reason of strict bonds, I cursed them all in sundry instead. "A sturdy soul, Job, and of a comfortable conversation," quoth the voice. "Moreover, a man of mark, as witnesseth your peeper." "Rot him," growled the man Job, a beastly-seeming fellow, very slovenly and foul of person, who glared down at me out of one eye, the other being so bruised and swollen as to serve him no whit. "He should be over sideways, guts full of shot, for this same here eye of mine, if 'twas my say. But then it ain't your say, Job, nor yet Belvedere's. 'Tis hern, Job, hern, Cap'n Joe's. He's to be took care of," says she, "treated kind and gentle," says she. "And mark me, here's Belvedere's nose out of joint, do you see? And talking of noses, there's your eye, Job. Sink me, but he wiped your eye for you, my plague and perish him," snarled Job, kicking me viciously. "Burn him. 'Tis keel haul him I would first, and then give him to Pompey to carve up what remained." "Pompey!" exclaimed this fellow Dickon, a merry-seeming fellow, but with a truculent eye. "Looky, Job, here's the match for Pompey at last, as I do think, man to man, bare fists or knives, a match, and I'll lay to it." "Psha!" growled Job. "Pompey could eat him. Bones and all, curse him. Pompey would break his back as he did the big Spaniards last week." "Nay, Job, this fellow should make better fight for it than did the Spanisher. Now, looky, match him, and I'll lay all my share of the voyage on this fellow. Come now." "A match? Why, so I would, but what a Belvedere?" "He sulketh, Job, and yonder he cometh, a-suckin' of his thumb, and all along of this fellow and our Joe. Joanna's cocked her eye on this fellow in Belvedere's cake dough. See him yonder?" Now, following the speaker's look, I perceived Captain Belvedere descending the quarter ladder, his handsome face very evil and scowling. Spying me where I lay, he came striding up and folding his arms, stood looking over me silently a while. "Lord love me," he exclaimed at last in huge disgust, and spat upon me. "Aft with him to the coach." "Coach, Cap'n?" questioned Job, staring. "And why there?" "Because I say so," roared Belvedere. "And because," quoth Dickon, his eye more truculent than ever, "because women will be women, eh, Cap'n?" At this, Belvedere's face grew suffused. His eyes glared, and he turned upon the speaker with clenched fist. Then, laughing grimly, he spurred me savagely with his foot. "Joanna hath her whimsies. Here's one of them," quoth he, and spat on me again, whereat I raged and strove, despite my bonds, to come at him. "I were saying to Job," quoth the man Dickon, thrusting me roughly beyond reach of Belvedere's heavy foot, "that here was a fellow to match Pompey at last." "Tush," said Belvedere with an oath, "Pompey would quarter of him with naked hands. I was a-saying to Job I would wager my share in the voyage on this fellow Belvedere. Aye, Cap'n, growled Job. 'Tis well enough keeping the Don to hang afore Nombre. Why must this dog live aft and cosseted? He should walk overboard with slit weasened or better. He's meat for Pompey, and wherefore no? I ask why, Cap'n? Why, cried Belvedere, gnashing his teeth. Ask her. Go, ask Joanna the cursed jade. She be only a woman when all's said, Cap'n. Nay, Job, quoth Belvedere, shaking his head, she's Joanna, and behind her do lie Tressidy and Saul and Rory and Abnegation Mings, and all the fellowship. So if she says he lives, lives it is, to lie soft and feel dainty, curse him. Let me die if I don't wish I'd left her on the island to end him her own way, with steel or kindness. Kindness, said Dickon with an ugly leer. Why, there it is, Cap'n. She's off with the old, and on with the new, like. Not yet, by God, snarled Belvedere, twixt shut teeth and scowling down on me, while his hand clawed at the pistol in his belt. Then his gaze wandered from me towards the poop and back again. Curse him, said he, stamping in his impotent fury. I'd give a handful of gold pieces to see him dead and be damned. And here he fell a-biting savagely at his thumb again. Why, then, here's a lad to earn 'em, quoth Job, and that's me. I've a score agin him for this lick of the eye give me ashore. Nigh blinded me, he did, burn and blast his bones. Aye, but what of Joanna? What of that she-snake, ha? 'Tis no matter for her, I've a plan. What is Job, lad? Speak fair, and the money's good as yourn. Aye, but it ain't mine yet, Cap'n, so mum it be, but I've got a plan. Belay, Job, exclaimed Dickon. Easy, all. Yonder she cometh. Sure enough, I saw Joanna descend the ladder from the poop and come mincing across the deck towards us. Hola, Belvedere, mon capitaine, said she, glancing about her quick-eyed. You do keep your ship very foul, yes, dirt to dirt, ah? But I am aboard, and this shall be amended. Look to it. And your mizzen yard is sprung. Down with it, and sway up another. Aye, aye, Joe, said Belvedere, nodding. It shall be done. Manana, quoth she, frowning, this doth not suit. When I am aboard, no. The new yard must be rigged now, at once, for we sail with the flood, voila. Sail, Joe, said Belvedere, staring. Can't be, Joe. And wherefore? Oh, we be short of water, for one thing. Ah, bah, we shall take all we want from other ships. And the lads be set, heart and soul, on a few days ashore. But then I am set, my heart, my soul, on heaving anchor so soon as the tide serves. We will sail with the flood. Now see the new yard set up, and have this slave Martin of mine to my cabin. So saying, she turned on her heel and minced away, while Belvedere stood, looking after her and biting at his thumb. Job scowled and Dickon smiled. So-ho, quoth he, Cap'n Joe says we sail, and sail it is, hey? Blind you, cried Belvedere, turning on him in a fury. Go forward and turn out two of the lads to draw this carcass aft. Here bestowing a final kick on me, he swaggered away. Sail with the flood, is it? Growled Job. And us with scarce any water, and half on us rotten with scurvy or calenture. And no luck this cruise, neither. Sail with the flood, says she. Be damned, says I. By hooky, but I marvel she lives. I wonder no one don't snuff her out, for good and all. I burn me, but I do. Because you're a fool, Job, and don't know her like we do. She's la culebra, and why? Because she's quick as any snake and is deadly. Besides, she's our luck, and luck she'll bring us, she always do. Whatever ship she's aboard has all the luck, wind, weather, and what's better, rich prizes, Job. I know it, and the lads forward know it, and Belvedere, he knows it, and is mighty feared of her, and small blame either. Aye, and mayhap you'll be afeared of her when you know her better. She's only a woman, says you. True, says I, but in all this here world, there ain't her match, woman or man, and you can lay to that, my lad. Now the ropes that secured me, being very tight, began to cause me no little pain, insomuch that I besought the man Dickon to loose me a little. Whereupon he made as to comply, but Job, who it seemed was quartermaster and new in the office, would have none of it, but cursed me vehemently instead, and hailing two men, had me forthwith dragged aft to a small cabin under the poop, and there having abused and cuffed me to his heart's content, left me. And in right woeful plight was I, with clothes nigh torn off, and myself direly bruised from head to foot. And what with this and the cramping strictness of my bonds, I could come by no easement, turn and twist me how I might. After some while, as I lay thus miserable and pain in every joint of me, the door opened, closed, and Joanna stood above me. Ah, you are very foul of blood, said she in bitter mockery. 'Twas thus you spake me once, Martino, you'll mind. Very foul of blood, said you, and I famishing with hunger. Art hungry, Martino? She questioned, bending over me, but meeting her look, I scowled and held my peace. Ha! Won't you talk? Is the sullen fit on you? Said she, scowling also. Then you shall hear me, and first know this. You are mine henceforth, aye, mine. So saying, she seated herself on the cushioned locker whereby I lay, and setting her foot upon my breast and elbow, on knee, leaned above me, dimpled chin on fist, staring down on me with her somber gaze. You are mine, said she again, to use as I will. To exalt or cast down, I can bestow on ye life, or very evil death. By my will ye are alive. When I will, you must surely die. Your wants, your every need, must you look to me for. So, I am your goddess and ruler of your destiny, yes. Ah, had you been more of a man and less of fish, I had made you captain of this ship, and loved you, Martino, loved you. Ah, cried I bitterly, until you wearied of me, as you have wearied of this rogue Belvedere, it seems, I and God knoweth how many more. Oh, la la, fool, these I never loved. Why then, said I, the more your shame. As I uttered the words, she leaned down and smote me lightly upon my swollen lips, and so left me. But presently she came, and with three of her crew, bearing chains, etc., which fellows at her command, albeit they were something gone in liquor, forthwith clapped me up in these fetters, and thereafter cut away the irksome cords that bound me. Whilst this was a-doing, she, quick to mark their condition, lashed them with her tongue, giving them loathly sots, drunken swine, scum of the world, and like epithets, all of the which they took in mighty humble fashion, knuckling their foreheads, ducking their heads with never a word, and mighty glad to stumble away and be gone at flick of her contemptuous finger. "So, here's you, Martino," said she when we were alone. "Here's you in chains that might have been free, and here's myself, very determined you shall learn somewhat of shame and be slave at command of such beasts as yonder. Do you hear, fool? Do you hear?" But I heeding her none at all, she kicked me viciously so that I flinched despite myself, for I was very sore, whereat she gave a little laugh. "Ah," said she, nodding, "if I did not love you, now I would watch you die. But the time is not yet, no. When that hour is, then, if I am not your death, you shall be mine. Death for one or other, or both, for I..." She sprang to her feet as from the deck above came the uproar of a sudden brawl with drunken outcry. "Ah, Madre de Dios," said she, stamping in her anger. "Oh, these bestial things called men," which said she whipped a pistol from her belt, cocked it, and was gone with a quick light patter of feet. Suddenly I heard the growing tumult overhead, split and smitten to silence by a pistol shot, followed by a wailing cry that was drowned in the tramp of feet away forward. As for me, my poor body, freed of its bonds, found great easement thereby, and despite my irons, so that I presently laid myself down on one of these cushion lockers. And indeed, though small, this cabin was rarely luxurious and fine. But scarce had I stretched my aching limbs, then the door opened, and a man entered. And surely never in all this world was stranger creature to be seen. Gaunt and very lean was he of person, and very well bedight from heel to head. But the face that peered out twixt the curls of his great periwig lacked for an eye, and was seamed and seared with scars in horrid fashion. Moreover, the figure beneath his rich, wide-skirted coat seemed warped and twisted beyond nature. Yet as he stood viewing me with his solitary eye, this gray and very quick and bright, there was that in his appearance that somehow took my fancy. "What, messmate?" quoth he in full hearty voice, advancing with a shambling limp. "Here cometh one to lay alongside you a while, old Resolution Day, friend, mate of this here noble ship, happy dispatch, comrade, and that same myself, looky." But having no mind to truck with him or any of this evil company, I bid him leave me be and cursed him roundly for the pirate rogue he was. "Pirate," said he, no whit abashed at my outburst. "Why, pirate it is, but look ye, there never was pirate the like of me for holiness, especially Sundays. Lord love you, there's never a parson or divine, high church or low, a patch on me for real holiness, especially a Sundays. So do I pray, when cometh my time to die, be it in better boots, by sickness, bullet, or noose, it may chance of a Sunday. And then again, why not a pirate? What of yourself, friend? There's a regular fire and blood, skull and bones. Look about ye, as liketh me very well. And there be many worse things than a mere pirate, brother. And what, you'll go for to ask? Answer I, Spanishers, Papishers, the Pope of Rome and his bloody Inquisition, of which last I have lasting experience, camarado. I have. Ah, said I, sitting up, you have suffered the torture. Comrade, look at me. The fire, the pulley, the rack, the wheel, the water, there's no devilment they ain't tried on this poor carcass of mine. And all by reason of a Spanish nun as bore away with my brother.
Your brother?
Aye, but 'twas me she loved, for I was younger then and something kinder to the eye. So him they burned, her they buried alive, and me they tormented into the rack you see. But I escaped with my life. The Lord delivered me out of their bloody hands, which was an ill thing for them, do you see? For though I lack my starboard blinker and am somewhat crank of my spars alow and aloft, I can yet ply whinger and pull trigger rare enough and apt enough for the rooting out of evil. And where a fairer field for the aforesaid rooting out of Papishers, Portingales, and the evil men than this good ship, the Happy Dispatch? Aha, messmate, there's many as such as I've dispatched hot foot to their master Sathanas, twixt then and now. And so 'tis I'm a pirate, and so being, so do I sing along a David. Blessed be the Lord, my strength, that teacheth my hands to war and my fingers to fight. Rare gift of words had Davy, and for curses none may compare. Hereupon, seating himself on the locker over against me, he thrust a hand into his great side pocket, and brought thence a hank of small cord, a silver-mounted pistol, and lastly a small, much-battered volume. "Look'ee, comrade," said he, tapping the worn covers with bony finger, "the Bible is a mighty fine book to fight by, to stir up a man for battle, murderer, or sudden death that hath no equal, and for keeping his hate against his enemies ever a-burning. There's no book written or ever will be." "You talk blasphemy," quoth I. "Avast, avast," cried he, "here's no blasphemy, thought or word. I love this little Bible of mine. It's meat and drink to me, the friend of my solitude, my solace in pain, my joy for ever and alway. Some men, being crossed in fortune, hopes, ambition, or love, take 'em to drink and the like vanities. I, that suffered all this, took to the Bible, and found all my needs betwixt the covers of this little book. For where shall a wronged man find such a comfortable assurance as this? Hark ye, what saith our psalmist?" Turning over a page or so, and lifting one knotted fist aloft, Resolution Day read this: "I shall bathe my footsteps in the blood of mine enemies, and the tongues of the dog shall be red with the same." "The witch," said he, rolling his bright eye at me, "the witch is a sweet, pretty fancy for the solace of one that hath endured as much as I." "Aye, a noble book is Psalms. I know it by heart. I list ye to this now: the wicked shall perish, and the enemies of the Lord be as fat of rams, as smoke shall they consume away. Brother, I've watched 'em so consume many's the times, and been the better for it. Harkee again. They shall be as chaff before the wind, as a snail that melteth. They shall every one pass away. Break their teeth in their mouth, O God," saith Davy. I and belike did it too, and so have I ere now with a pistol butt. I mind once when we stormed Santa Catalina, and the women and children a-screaming in the church, which chanced to be afire, I took out my Bible here and read these comfortable words: "The righteous shall rejoice when he seeth the vengeance. He shall wash his feet in the blood of the wicked, so that a man shall say, verily, there is a reward for the righteous. Aha, brother! For filling a man with gust of hate and battle, well, there's not like the Bible. And when a curse is wanted, give me David. Davy was a man of his hands, moreover, and so are you, friend. I watched ye fight on the sand spit yonder. 12-1 is long enough odds for any man. And yet here's 5 of the 12 with bones broke, and never one but with some mark of your handiwork to show, which is vastly well, comrade. Joanna's choice is mine, messmate. How do you mean? I demanded, scowling, whereupon he beamed on me friendly-wise and blinked his solitary eye. "There is no man aboard this ship," quoth he, nodding again. "No, not one as could keep 12 in place so long, friend, saving only Black Pompey." "I've heard his name already," said I. "What like is he, and who?" "Ah, poor heathen comrade, a blackamoor friend, a child of Beelzebub, abounding in blood, brother, being torturer, executioner and cook, and notable in each several office. A man small of soul, yet great of body, being naught but a poor black heathen, as I say. And ashore yonder you shall hear our Christian messmates a quarreling over their rum, as is the way of your Christians hereabouts. Hark to 'em." The Happy Dispatch lay anchored hard by the reef, and rode so near the island that, glancing from one of her stern gallery windows, I might behold Deliverance Beach, shining under the moon, and a great fire blazing, round which danced divers of the crew, filling the night with lewd, unholy riot of drunken singing and shouts that grew ever more fierce and threatening. I was gazing upon this scene, and Resolution Day beside me, when the door was flung open, and Job the quartermaster appeared. "Captain Joe wants ye ashore with her," said he, beckoning to Resolution, who nodded and, thrusting Bible into pocket, took thence the silver-mounted pistol, examined flint and priming, and, thrusting it into his belt, followed Job out of the cabin, locking the door upon me. Thereafter I was presently aware of a boat putting off from the ship, and craning my neck saw it was rowed by Resolution, with Joanna in the stern sheets, a naked sword across her knees. And my gaze held by the glimmer of the steel, I watched them row into the lagoon, and so to that spit of sand opposite Skeleton Cove. I saw the hateful glitter of this deadly steel as Joanna leapt lightly ashore, followed more slowly by Resolution. But suddenly divers of the rogues about the fire, beholding Joanna as she advanced against them thus, sword in hand, cried out a warning to their fellows, who, ceasing from their strife, immediately betook them to their heels, fleeing before her like so many mischievous lads. Marveling, I watched until she had pursued them out of my view. Hereupon I took to an examination of my fetters, link by link, but finding them mighty secure, laid me down as comfortably as they would allow, and fell to pondering my desperate situation. And seeing no way out herefrom, and study how I might, I began to despond, but presently, bethinking me of Don Federigo, and judging his case more hopeless than mine, if this could well be, and further remembering how, but for me, he would have, by death, delivered himself. I, that had not prayed this many a long month, now petitioned the God to whom nothing is impossible, that he would save alive this noble gentleman of Spain, and thus in his sorrows forgot mine own awhile. All at once I started up, full of sudden great and joyful content in all that was or might be, beholding in my fetters the very providence of God, as it were, and in my captivity his answer to my so oft repeated prayer. For now I remembered that with the flood this ship was to sail for Nombre de Dios, where safe dungeoned and secure against my coming lay my hated foe and deadly enemy, Richard Brandon. And now, in my vain and self-deluding pride, my heart firm set on this miserable man, his undoing and destruction, I cast me down on my knees, and babbled forth my passionate gratitude to him that is from everlasting to everlasting, the God of mercy, love, and forgiveness. Join me next time for another exciting chapter of Martin Conisbee's Vengeance by Jeffrey Farnall, here on Thrilling Tales of Adventure.